KYW News Radio Original Podcasts. From KYW News Radio 103.9 FM, this is Bridging Philly, connecting our communities on the issues that matter to you. Presented by Gift of Life Donor Program. Register as an organ donor at donorsone.org.
Hello, I'm Raquel Williams. Welcome to Bridging Philly. Nearly one in five people diagnosed with lung cancer have never smoked, yet the stigma remains. Lung cancer is the leading cause of cancer deaths in the United States, and one organization in Philadelphia is dedicated to supporting patients and promoting early detection, and of course, smashing the stigma. I sit down with the founder of Ride Hard, Breathe Easy, along with a three-time lung cancer survivor who is in her fourth battle with the disease.
All you need to get lung cancer is lungs.
And Charity Howard takes a trip to the circus.
I love seeing the big top. Like, it's their place where it's home.
That's all coming up on Bridging Philly. Lung cancer remains the leading cause of cancer death in the United States, taking more lives each year than breast, prostate, and colon cancers combined. And while many people still associate the disease with smoking, nearly one in five people diagnosed have never smoked at all. It's a disease that affects millions, yet it continues to be underfunded, misunderstood, and burdened by stigma. Today, we're talking with Ride Hard, Breathe Easy, an organization dedicated to supporting patients, promoting early detection, and challenging the stigma. Joining us are John Matthews, founder of Ride Hard, Breathe Easy, Lisa Etkins, a social worker from Fox Chase Cancer Center. She's connected Ride Hard, Breathe Easy funding to many patients. And Terri-Ann DiGiulio, a three-time lung cancer survivor who is now in her fourth fight with this disease. Welcome, everyone, to Bridging Philly.
Thank you very much.
Let's first start off with you, John, and talk about how Ride Hard, Breathe Easy was started. What was going on at the time?
Back in 2011, March of 11, my mother was diagnosed with lung cancer, and it was a frightening diagnosis to the family. And yet, over the next 9 months, we learned so much about the disease. We learned it's the number one cancer killer. The five-year survival rate is lower than other common cancers. There is a stigma that affects patients. And so when Mom was sick, about a week before she passed, I said, Mom, I'm going to do something. And sure enough, a few years later, I found myself riding a bike across the country.
Wow.
I wasn't a cyclist. But it was our first step to doing something to in memory of my mom. And with a lot of help with family and friends and people, we made the ride across the country and created this thing called Ride Hard, Breathe Easy. And since then, we've raised a little over $1.2 million.
Wow.
And so right now, that's what we do. We raise money throughout the year. We work with eight amazing cancer centers who identify patients who just need that hand. They need a ride to an appointment.
Mm.
They need a utility bill paid. A few patients needed a wig because their grandchildren had never seen them without hair before. So we work with these amazing cancer centers. They see what patients need. And then through the money that we raise through our organization, they just go out and do whatever they can to help patients today.
I mean, the fact that you just hopped on a bike and rode cross country you were never a cyclist to me is just, it's amazing. And it seems to be, like you said, a family affair, because I did interview your nephew last year and he rode from California to Ocean City all for his grandma.
He did.
And he was telling me about the memories that he had with her in Ocean City, and he wanted to do something as well. So definitely very much a family affair, but bike riding. I'm just wondering how that came about. Why bike riding, of all things?
We wanted to do something that was hard, first of all, but more people can get involved with. And so when I did the ride across the country, I had help every step of the way. I had somebody in a car or a van nearby for every bit of my ride, just like my nephew Jack did. In addition to that, since then, we've had more rides and more people who join in. So it's one of those things. Yes, it's difficult. But it's an easy way to bring the community together. So we have social workers, we have doctors, we have nurses, we have friends, we have family who have come out and ridden, and we're raising some money to help patients. And bike riding is just one of those great ways where you can bring the community together.
Mm-hmm. And Lisa, you rode in the most recent community bike ride, right? How was that?
I did. Thanks. It was It was challenging. Always is. It's my sixth year riding 100 miles on my Peloton.
Wow.
In one day. And I have two friends that usually hop on and join with me, plus the board kind of chips in and rides different rides along the way. It took us 6.5 hours. It's always pretty powerful. One of the things I always say is my patients are on my back, and I'm pedaling for them, because one day of a struggle for me, they're dealing every day with struggling just to walk across their house or to get groceries or to get to treatment. So the one day of a really, really hard challenge for myself feels really rewarding.
And it's so neat when you watch the end where her kids, she has two beautiful daughters, and there they are, they're cheering and they're screaming. Now, they cheered even louder every year, it seems like. They're just up, they're cheering, and they're counting down as Lisa's finishing. It's such a special moment to her family and how much Lisa and the team have gotten involved.
Wow. And with every breath, probably you're thinking of the breath of all your patients.
Yeah.
It's just so meaningful. Terri-Ann, if you can, just share with us your journey. I know you've had quite a journey. You're in your fourth battle with this. Talk about your initial experiences with lung cancer and how you were initially diagnosed and what was going on in your life at the time.
So it's very interesting. My first and this current fourth diagnosis were both incidental findings. So they were found accidentally in the emergency room. I had no symptoms whatsoever. And 21 years ago was my first diagnosis. So I'm still here. Mm-hmm. And that is all because of early detection and follow-up. And I'd like to add that I have also ridden with Ride Hard, Breathe Easy.
Oh, wow, great.
I rode my first century ever with John Matthews. And that's what early detection can do. I'm a cyclist. I don't know that right now I could ride 100 miles. My lung capacity is a little different than it was. But a few years ago, I could. And I do encourage people, if they qualify for screening, to get screened. If the disease is caught early, it's when it's most treatable. Mm-hmm. And we've made strides in this disease as far as research and advances in treatment options. I'm one of six people in my family who have been diagnosed with this disease.
Wow.
And I'm only one of two to still be here. So it's really important for me to give back and to do as much as I can and to share my story and help create more outcomes like mine.
Yeah. Well, your story, of course, so inspiring for all these years. I know you're in your fourth battle, but still here to help people, still here to push forward the message and to be an example.
Yes.
I think that's awesome. Let's talk a little bit more about lung cancer in and of itself. Since Terri-Ann brought up a couple of things, I wanted to make sure that we understood completely. Can we talk a little bit about lung cancer, what it is, and exactly who's more at risk?
There are different kinds of lung cancer, and I think that's what's really important. At the very highest level, it's broken down into either small cell lung cancer, which is tougher. If I was just to categorize, it's a tougher disease. And the other one is non-small cell. And what's interesting is you hear from Terri-Ann that she's been here 21 years. She's fighting. Mm-hmm. She's healthy. She's one hell of a cyclist.
Yeah.
I've ridden 100 miles with her a couple times because every year our organization does a long bike ride. And a couple of those years, Terri-Ann just joined us, and she was part of it for 2 days, 3 days. But what's important there is if you're diagnosed early meaning stage one, if you're diagnosed early, the chances of living 5 years, which is the common standard for any kind of cancer, it's over 60%, right?
Okay.
If you're diagnosed stage four, it's closer to 6%. Mm-hmm. So many people are anxious about getting screened. If I don't get screened, no one can tell me I have lung cancer. If I do get screened, I could have lung cancer. And if I do get screened and I have lung cancer, I may die. And yet there's so many people like Terri-Ann and others who I've known and who I love, who have been around for a long time, 10, 15, 20 years, who are also advocating for it. So to Terri-Ann's point, get screened. If you qualify, get screened. There are a number of organizations and the cancer centers that we work with in this area, in the Philadelphia area, like Penn, mm-hmm. like Temple, Fox Chase, Jefferson, and our newest partner is MD Anderson at Cooper. They all have programs. So if you're concerned, and a lot of the testing is around smoking history. for people. So that's a qualification. You have to be a certain age and you have to have a certain smoking history. And the advancements in the last 10 years have been monumental in the lung cancer world. So the commitment is there. What you just need as a patient, if you're not sure, just get tested, get screened, and hopefully you'll have a good outcome.
There's also a growing number of people with no risk factors, younger people that are being diagnosed, who are being diagnosed with lung cancer. So the main message I'd like to say is all you need to get lung cancer is lungs.
Right.
Anyone can get this disease. So if you have any symptoms like a persistent cough that won't go away, or you've coughed up blood, shortness of breath, talk to your primary care physician and talk to them about a possible CT scan, a low-dose CT scan of your chest, because it is possible to get lung cancer without any risk factors.
Right.
It's true. I was just going to add in that we have younger and younger patients getting diagnosed without any history of smoking or risk factors. Is it environmental? Is it food? Who knows? There's so many studies being done looking at, you know, pesticides, looking at estrogen. There's so many different things that they're looking at because younger women are more prevalent. Mm-hmm. The other thing is the patients who have no history of smoking tend to have these mutations, genetic mutations that open up more opportunity for targeted therapies. So their first line therapy might not be chemotherapy. It might be a targeted agent. And there's a million studies that keep coming and coming, and more drugs are down the pipeline. And mm-hmm. I've been doing this for 26 years, and the last 10 years, things have taken off in a crazy way, exponentially giving more opportunity to patients living longer and living quality of life, not just existence, actually thriving.
Something is concerning to me when we were talking, John, about if you qualify, you can get these screenings. And of course, Terri-Ann brought up the fact that, you know, so many people who have this have never smoked. But one of the qualifications for screenings is to have been a smoker. Are things starting to change in that respect now that we're seeing so many people that are being diagnosed who have never been a smoker?
It is changing, and it's changing slowly.
Hmm.
My advice simply is, it's your life, right? It's you have to advocate for yourself. And the examples that Terri-Ann brought up are so specific. Mm-hmm. If you're coughing up blood, if you have a cough that is persistent, advocate for yourself and suggest that this can happen. A former board member of ours, her name is Isabella Dela Jose. Isabella joined us. I got to know her because she writes me an email in 2020. John, I'm stage 4 lung cancer. I'm riding my bike across the country. I know you did it. Can we talk? She never drank. She never smoked. And in fact, she was an endurance athlete. And the doctor said to her, you can't have lung cancer. It's probably, your back hurts. That's probably because she was an endurance athlete. She literally ran a marathon in every state in this country.
Mm-hmm.
But here's one example of many. And I've been at lung cancer conferences. And this story just breaks my heart. It's, you have people who will say things like, I tell people I have a different kind of cancer so I can get the level of empathy, because there's such a stigma that you did it to yourself.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about that. You know, I'm going back 40 years. Let's go back to when I was even little and seeing the commercials. You know, the lung cancer commercials are all about the black lungs from smoking. We mind very much if you smoke. You know, I remember all of the PSAs and all of the ads. Yeah. It was all about lung cancer and smoking. Right. Don't do this to yourself.
So I want to say a couple of things. I think that stigma is an issue. And I think if we could go back to something you said, language is really important as well.
Okay.
So whether or not someone smoked does not mean that they deserve this disease. It's not who they are. So I prefer we don't refer to people as, and I'm putting air quotes around this, smokers or non-smokers. It's someone who has smoked or someone who didn't smoke. It's not who someone is.
Right.
And even if they did smoke, they don't deserve it.
Absolutely.
This disease. Stigma is a big issue. I think it's gotten in the way of funding this disease. I think the ads that you're talking about that people from my generation grew up with, it was focused on prevention. As a patient, one of the first questions I am asked is, did I smoke? And I know why people want to ask that, because if I say yes, and they did not smoke, they think they won't get this disease. Mm. So I use that question as a teaching moment to let them know no one's off the hook for this disease.
Right, right.
Everyone needs to be aware of it. And we need more public education so that we can catch this disease early. I don't believe there's this type of shame and blame associated with any other cancer other than lung cancer.
Yeah.
And it's really unfair to the patient community.
Yeah. Well, thank you for that. I appreciate you pointing that out, because it is important in terms of, you know, having the right language and reducing the stigma. And Lisa, you know, Terri-Ann brought up something you have said in the past, that no one ever gives hospitals money for lung cancer. Is that the situation still? Is that still the case?
We are seeing more foundations kind of noticing lung cancer. But it was 2019 when John came to Fox Chase with that first check. And he loves to remind me, and I do take some pride in this, that he made the social worker cry. It just touched me in so many ways, because people do feel the stigma and feel like that they don't deserve the same things that other cancer patients have. And obviously, I work with lung cancer patients, and I want to take that away from them. And all I want to do is make it easier and better if I can. And Ride Hard, Breathe Easy does make that happen. And we've seen some other, the American Lung Association has helped with some different funding, but still the majority is Ride Hard. And we just help offset, you know, groceries and gas bills and mortgage payments and rent when patients are struggling and they just are trying to decide if they're going to pay their medication or they're going to pay their mortgage. And, you know, people don't always speak up about it and talk about it to their physicians. So it's kind of just getting to know people and feeling out what's going on for them. But yes, the funding is huge. And people just look at you like, you have money to help me with that?
Right.
And I said, well, it's not like an ongoing thing, but it is something to help offset so that you can focus on your co-pays or things like that this month.
Bridging Philly continues in a moment. Back to Bridging Philly, connecting our communities on the issues that matter to you.
Terri-Ann, if you could talk a little bit more about some of the supports that patients need, whether it's from the community or from family or from, you know, your clinicians. What are some of the supports that are important to patients?
What I love the most about what John's doing is that every patient needs something different. Mm-hmm. And the social workers, the Lisas of the world, are the ones that know that. So whereas I'm in the middle of treatment right now, and my treatment is chemo radiation, and it's 30 proton treatments, Monday through Friday, for 6 straight weeks. I drive into the city. So I'm fortunate, and I have the support I need. But a lung cancer diagnosis, it's not just the medical stress. It's getting to treatments. Mm-hmm. It's all consuming. This is a full-time job for me for 6 straight weeks to get through treatment. And I have to do it because it's saving my life.
Right.
I'm fortunate and have the support, but the people that don't have the support, that's where John comes in. And it's a monumental support for cancer patients.
Yeah. What are some of the things that people, the basic things that I know we take so much for granted, what are just some of the basic things? I know there are barriers to care, barriers to receiving care. What are some of the ways that you're able to help patients?
One patient comes to mind is he had been living at a friend's house when he got diagnosed. He was sleeping on the floor and he didn't have the funds to buy a mattress. His friend only had a one-room apartment, but didn't want him to be homeless. So we used the funds from Ride Hard, and we were able to get him a mattress. also some grocery cards. So he was helping his friend who has been supplying some of the funds for him. And that was a huge help. We've helped with Uber Health transportation for him at times. He lived close enough. He liked to walk sometimes, which I encouraged because it's good for his lungs. It's good for his head. It's good for everything. But during the winter months, I was kind of forceful and said, we need to get you here safely.
Yeah.
So that's one story. Another one, we helped a patient who was struggling with back rent, and we helped offset 2 months of her rent and things like that. So she was able to feel like, okay, I can do this. Yeah. I can keep moving. Because a lot of times patients can't work during their treatment. And depending on what type of job they have, they might not get paid at all.
Right.
And they might not have disability options. So that becomes a huge stressor for them.
Yeah.
And so we can help with some of the basics.
Ride Hard, Breathe Easy seems to be quite the lifeline for so many people, John. I mean, you must just feel so fulfilled knowing that the organization is helping so many people.
I am. And speaking on behalf of our board, we see the difference that we're making in the community. We're working with 8 cancer centers, and in this area, I've told you to 5, but we also work with Duke, Dartmouth, and Johns Hopkins. You all said the same thing that Lisa said back in 2019, which is we're the only nonprofit that they work with who gives them money directly to help patients who are dealing with their struggles today. We grew up in Northeast Philadelphia. I'm one of 6. Mom called us her 6 wonderful kids. But mom was born in Ireland on a farm, and she came here in her late teens. And she had this amazing saying that is the heartbeat and the backbone of our nonprofit. Many hands make light work is such a beautiful saying.
Yes.
So whether it's riding a bike, whether it's swinging a golf club when we have a golf event in a couple of weeks, or just making donations at our website. There's lots of ways that anybody can get involved. And we're just so proud that we've helped those 3,000 plus people. And we want to get to like 25,000 plus.
And how long have you been doing the community bike rides, and how often do you do them?
We do a bike ride every year. So the first one was 2017, and that was the cross country ride. And every year since then, we've done what I would call a long bike ride. My nephew did the big one last year going cross country. I got to say, he took the easier route going from west to east. I did east to west, which is, anyhow, I'm just teasing. But this year, our ride is going to be from Dartmouth. We're going to start at Dartmouth on August 11th. We're going to ride 425 miles, and we're going to finish at MD Anderson at Cooper on the 15th. So every year, there's a big ride, a handful of people join that, and we do some community rides as well throughout the year.
Okay. And of course, there are many lung cancer survivors that take advantage of being in the ride. It must just be so rewarding to see them, you know, finish rides where they thought perhaps they weren't able to do that again, or maybe never even rode a bike before and said, I'm going to do this, and spread the word and the message.
We did a 50-mile ride. I think it was 2 years ago. I was riding with a stage 4 lung cancer gentleman who is amazing, and he's doing great, and he was getting up this hill a lot easier than me. And I just looked at him. I'm like, okay, I can do this. And he stayed by my side and kept motivating me. And I said, I mean, I was so touched by it, but he's someone who inspires me every day. And he keeps on fighting.
So. And Terri-Ann, what does it mean for you to engage in these rides when you're able to?
I love it. I love being on my bike. I love raising money and helping other patients. I feel like there's a reason I'm still here. And I do it because of my family members. I do it to give back. I do it for the younger people that are being diagnosed. I have the privilege of aging. I turned 65 this year. Aging is a privilege, and it's
wonderful.
One that I've been granted. So I need to do something meaningful with the gift that I've been given.
I love that you say aging is a privilege.
I love that too.
Absolutely. Thank you for saying that. So I'm just going to ask all of you, what gives you hope today to continue the work that you're doing?
The number of people we've helped gives us the reason to keep going on. We work with eight cancer centers. We know there's more that are out there that we could work with. We want to help more patients. The joy that I see from people who just, they learn about us, they get some help. The notes, the stories, it makes us feel great that we know we're doing something that's unique. And just the family and the friends and the people who we recently met, who they hear about what we're doing and they just want to be part of it, right? So it started out with a handful of people trying to figure stuff out, not sure what we're doing, but just wanting to help patients, into this community of people that are dedicated to, whether it's coming out for a ride, whether it's making a donation, whether it's donating an item for an auction, whatever it can be, people see and know that what we're doing is helping someone. It could be helping them or their family at some point in the future. Mm-hmm. And so it gives me great hope that the people involved with us are just so dedicated and caring to making a difference. And so that's on the people side. The other side is that I'm so optimistic about what's happening in the lung cancer community with the research. Terry Ann, I've heard her say it a number of times, she's here today. She's here today because of research, and the research is getting better and better and better, and more organizations are investing. So to all those out there, just keep investing. It's making a difference, and people are living longer.
Okay. And Lisa, what gives you hope to continue?
Seeing the changes that are in the pipeline and just watching patients living longer with quality of life, and just seeing, I say, the breath of fresh air by taking some of the burden off of them with the financials, but also just encouragement and reducing the stigma, educating people, making sure that it is out there, and hearing you talk about this and getting the word out is so helpful and promising for the future. But again, it's my patience.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And Terry Ann, for the person who is listening, who just got that diagnosis of stage 1 lung cancer, what would you say to them?
There's hope. There is hope. The advances that we've made in treatment options over the past 21 years, I personally have benefited from them. There is a community of people out here for that patient, whether it be Ride Hard, Breathe Easy or the patient community. We're all here to support you and lift you up.
All right. And how can people learn more about Ride Hard, Breathe Easy?
Just go to our website, www.rhbe.org. We've had so many people who have joined us in the past couple of years, and we'd be happy to welcome you. If you need to send an email, info@rhbe.org, we'll get back to you. We'll help you out. We'd love to have you be part of what we do.
Okay. And so you have a golf outing coming up on June 8th, and you did mention the ride on August 11th to the 15th. So, of course, go to the website and see how you can get involved, donate, get on that bike, whatever you need to do.
Absolutely.
All right. John Matthews, Lisa Etkins, Terry Ann DiGiulio, thank you so much for sharing and for being with us here on Bridging Philly. We appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Bridging Philly continues in a moment. Back to Bridging Philly from KYW News Radio 103.9 FM.
What's going on under the big top outside of the Greater Philadelphia Expo Center in Oaks? Charity Howard gets a behind-the-scenes look at Cirque du Soleil's new show, Luzia.
This week on Share in the City, I'm running away with the circus, Cirque du Soleil, that is, in Oaks. And I'm going to give you guys a sneak peek at their new show, Luzia, the combination of the words lights and rain in Spanish. It sounds so beautiful. And I'm just pulling up now.
You've arrived at your destination.
Oh my gosh. How do I not see this from Route 202? There's this huge blue and white 3-point circus tent. When they said big top boy, they weren't kidding. All right, now my buddy Brian is supposed to meet me at the front gate. He's getting me in. I hope that doesn't mean sneaking me in, because honestly, I am not prepared to hop this huge fence. Seriously though, where is everybody? There he is.
Hey, welcome to the Big Top. I'm Brian. I'm the local publicist for Cirque du Soleil, and we're here with the amazing Charlie Wagner. She oversees everything with Luzia here.
Charlie, let's do this. It's going to be a great day, right?
Oh yeah, it is going to be a great day. We're going to bring you backstage, show you everything that's going around for our premiere.
Stop it. Behind the scenes?
Behind the scenes.
You know I know. Let's go.
Let's do it.
Cirque du Soleil style. Grand, grand, and more grand.
It is really cool. I love seeing the big top. Like, this means to us, it's their place where it's home. Mm-hmm. Everywhere we go, we bring this. Everything you see around, we travel with. So it takes us 7 days to build our village, and then we're ready.
Then you unpacked all of this. What a big suitcase. We're joining the circus today, guys. Let's do it. All right, so first stop is where again?
We're going to go. Adagio is training on stage right now. So we're going to go have a look at what they're doing. And then you're going to get the opportunity to speak with Chris, which is one of the Adagio porter.
I love it. So tell us a little bit more about Cirque du Soleil. And of course, Luzia, Cirque du Soleil has that thing. Nothing else is like it.
It's a mix of pushing the human body to its limit mixed with technology. So what I love about Cirque is that every show is different. We have our own storyline, our own costume, our own music. So when you come here, it's a fully new, different experience every single time.
So if you've gone once, the next time is going to be your first time all over again.
Exactly. And like every show is different. It's a live performance. So even if you've seen, I've seen this show probably 100 times and I'm not sick of seeing it. I still love it so much because I can always notice new little things according to where you're sitting. And they will also react to the audience reaction. So the more you give to them, the more they're going to give you back to you.
All right, let's go.
It's going to be a little dark.
They're actually pulling back a curtain. Wow. It's pitch black with lights above the stage. It feels like we're walking into like maybe another world.
So what they're doing right now is a validation. So today, one after the other, every single act of the show is going to come on stage and they're going to do a run with lights and make sure that everything feels all right.
And that circular stage is already spinning.
Yeah, this is one of the great things about Zluzia is that we do have 2 turntables in our stage. So the action is always moving. So it doesn't matter where you're sitting in the big top, you'll always get a good view. It's going to go super dark and then the music's going to go and then you'll be able to see exactly what's happening.
And I can't even see my hand in front of my face.
No, that's the start of the, yeah, that's kind of the introduction to the act. This is actually the second act, the second acrobatic act in the show. It is one of my favorite. It is so beautiful, so stunning.
So 3 guys and a woman on stage, she's spinning into his arms. It's really so romantic.
Oh yeah, it's beautiful. And right now it is a recording, but during the show, like, the music is live and the singer is on stage singing with them, which add an extra layer. It's so graceful. And this is why we do rehearsal, to make sure that all of those little things that are not necessarily the way they should be going, that we get them out of the way, and then tomorrow we have the best show as we can.
I saw nothing.
You saw nothing. Yeah, but that's like, that's also like, they're professional.
Things so smooth.
And then as you can see around us, there's still like ladder being moved, things being like, so we're really going into like fine-tuning the last little details to make sure that everything is set up and perfect.
Beautiful backdrop. Who does the artwork? Huge medallion. It's like this golden red crimson medallion that's behind them, almost like framing it.
The set design was done by Eugene Caballero, who is Mexican. So he's been working with the director of the show, Daniele Finzi-Pasca, who traveled in Mexico and live in Mexico for about 10 years. So Luzia is basically his love letter to Mexico.
And it's glamour and simplicity all in one place.
Yeah, and we call it the disc. It represents the Aztec calendar on this side. And when it spins, you're going to be, at some point it's the moon, at some point it's the sun. So yeah, it
changes. Oh, it's changing now.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. It's amazing. And then they're back into
She's up in the air again.
She's flying again.
All right, so where to next?
We're going to go and speak with Chris, who is the guy with the pink shirt.
Awesome. Feeling like the Three Stooges in the dark. Whoop, 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 whoop. Oh my gosh, here we go. It was so dark.
It's really dark. Uh-huh.
So now we're crossing the curtain. We're going to go into the backstage area, into our artistic tent. We'll just watch your steps.
Off we go. Oh, hey, pink shirt.
I have Chris here for you. He's one of our Adagio porter.
Oh, Adagio. Adagio Chris. How you doing, man?
Adagio Chris. I like it. Yeah, I'm good. I'm good. Thank you. How are you?
Very good. So we just watched you out there. It was beautiful. You made it seem so seamless. It was gorgeous, but we know this is death-defying. This is no easy task.
Thank you. Thank you. But if you tell us that it's beautiful, that's what we're aiming for, yeah? Like, to know that it's some impressive and potentially dangerous, risky things, but to make it look, you know, nice and smooth and seemingly effortless.
When you're out there, really, what's talking to you? What are you paying attention to?
Well, there's a lot, actually. Like, throughout the years, you try to make your own story, and you try to stick to it, variating a little bit, not to get too bored. But also, actually, each place makes it different because the very important part of the performance is the energy that you get from the audience. maybe you have seen now sitting in the audience watching us train, that no matter where you sit in the big top, you feel kind of close to the stage. And you really, in training clothes, maybe you don't see it that well, but with the costumes, with the makeup, with the lights, with the scenography, with the live music, the magic comes to life. And then no matter where you sit in the big top, you're under influence of that magic. And we receive it. We feel it as well on stage, believe us.
Poof.
Yeah, no matter how many times you do it, once you enter there and there are 200, 2,500 people there in the audience, it is impressive, always.
Yeah. Amazing.
All right, so where to next?
This is the Ben Pit, so this is...
How you doing, man?
Good, and you?
What's
your name? Sebastian.
Awesome, love that bass.
All right.
Give it to me one more time. I love it.
Sebastian is the band leader, so all our music in the show is live. So as you can see here, they all have little booths. So this is the drummer booth. Next, you have Sebastian's booth. And then they all have TV, so they can see what's happening on stage.
Timing is everything.
They are the one who will adapt to the acrobat. So if something goes faster, slower, they can adapt. So, and Sebastian is in communication with all the other musicians through in-ear systems, and then they can really make sure that the music is following the show.
I hear and see what you are putting down.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
And I always say there's as many things going on in the backstage as there is on stage during the show.
Oh, no doubt.
Oh, yeah. And then we take this tunnel over here to make our way to the artistic tent, which is the space where the artists can warm up, get ready for the show.
Now, what is that?
So this is our horse. So it's just being transported from Miami. So now it's getting rebuilt. But yeah, it is, you know, it's part of the opening scene of the show. It is a massive horse, one of our puppets. We need three artists inside the horse to make it walk on stage. And then next to him, we have our jaguar. His name is Tenoch.
So let me break it down for you folks. These are two metal, amazing mechanical animals. They're building in front of me, bit by bit. Two women, by the way. And so much of this, the costumes. Like, do we get a peek?
Oh yeah, we're gonna go and have a look at the wardrobe. It's one of my favorite departments. What you see over here, it is the singer dress. So we call it the flower dress. It is hanging because it is really fragile, because every flower are controlled by an individual motor. So during the show, all the flowers that you see, they bloom.
It's suspended in the air right now because she said it's so fragile. That too makes sense. So
and
cool.
Then let me introduce you to Colette, who is our assistant head of wardrobe.
Well, Colette, hello, hello.
Hello, nice to meet you.
So tell us.
So there's 1,000 articles of costume in the show itself, and then we have double of that back here. So we always have backups. We're ready for anything.
You have to have an understudy, even for the wardrobe.
Oh, 100%. You never know what's going to happen, especially at Cirque du Soleil, where everything is just like next level, and you've got to be ready for any acrobatics.
Rips, tears, or even mustard.
It does happen.
All right, so Cirque du Soleil, Luzia, how can people see it? When can they see it?
So we're here in Oaks until June 7, and people who want to come and see us, you can find tickets on CirqueDuSoleil.com.
Thank you for joining us. Bridging Philly is brought to you by Gift of Life Donor Program. Register as an organ donor at donorsone.org. For more information on Bridging Philly, follow KYW News Radio on social media. And if you have any ideas for interesting features that you'd like to share, feel free to get in touch with us at bridgingphilly@kywnewsradio.com. For Sharaday Howard and our producer Sabrina Boyd-Circa, I'm Raquel Williams. Be well.